Hello and welcome to episode 55 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is September 4th, 2017. I am Rollo McFlugel and with me is Slappy Jones 2 and we're both at McFlugel.com. The show notes page for this episode is McFlugel.com/55. So I'm going to pass it on over to Slappy and he's going to introduce our topic for this episode.
Hey, thanks Rollo. Thanks everyone for listening today. Today we are going to talk about a blog post written by a fellow Catholic, Rollo and I are both Catholics, named Mark Shea on his blog, which is hosted on Patheos, called Catholic and Enjoying It. The title of this blog post is Libertarianism is Incompatible with the Faith. So obviously we disagree with that statement, but we're going to go through it and talk about some of his arguments. I don't really think this is a great article, to be honest with you. I think he's writing to people who maybe heard a little bit about libertarianism but don't know much about it. But we'll get to that. We're gonna read it, and as we go, we'll comment on it. So this is Mark Shea, quote, "Libertarianism, we are told, opposes plunder and violence. No, libertarianism opposes any exercise of state power. That's what it's about. It is, like all heretical impulses, the exaltation of a couple of Catholic ideas, the dignity of personal responsibility, the goodness of property, and the hostility to state exercises of lawless tyranny, swollen to madness and used as weapons against the rest of the Church's teachings on the common good and the responsibility of the state to maintain justice. Libertarianism is the religious superstition that individualists don't need the help of society, that the state only does evil, and that your average Fox brainwashing victim on the fixed income will be fine because the 1% totally care about him and certainly will defend him when the party of Trump robs him of Social Security and Medicaid, period." Okay, so we'll start there. This is now me talking and not Mark Shea. Rollo, we'll start really with that second paragraph, but the guy's totally missing the point of libertarianism when he calls it the party of Trump and your average Fox brainwashing victim. We're pretty involved in libertarianism. I don't really see anyone, or very few. I mean, I guess it depends on how you define libertarian, you know, but I don't know of anyone who was a big Trump supporter or a big Fox News fan. I assume he's talking about Fox News. He just puts Fox there. But anyway, what are your thoughts? I'll shut up for a minute.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that libertarianism is in any way a heresy of the Catholic faith. That's kind of interesting that he goes all the way to say that.
Well, real quick.
I mean, first of all, libertarianism is not a religion.
Well, he says here, libertarianism is the religious superstition that individuals don't need the help of society, basically. That is very far from the truth.
Right.
But if you had to, in three letters or, you know, a sentence, how would you define libertarianism?
Against violence against peaceful individuals.
Right, non-aggression principle.
Yeah, that's why I said the three letters.
Yeah, NAP, right? It has nothing to do with anything more than that. So, yeah, it's true. You can find libertarians who you disagree with on just about anything, but there is no doctrine of libertarianism that you must believe these things, only that you should not use aggressive violence against innocent people, period. That's it.
Right. But then he goes on to say that it opposes the common good, which, again, I mean, it's one of the typical straw mans against libertarianism, is that since we're against the state and people like to conflate the state with society and then say that society is, you know, for the common good, that we must be against the common good, when the reality is that we're libertarians because we believe this is the best way to create the common good.
Create the most good for the most amount of people, or whatever, just society in general.
Right. So, I mean, and just, well, I don't even know if he's saying that we're supposed to be the party of Trump or that.
Well, he says we'll defend him when the party of Trump robs him. Or maybe he's just saying, okay, I see. Maybe he's saying when Republicans steal your steal, in quotes, your Social Security and Medicaid, that libertarians say that's fine because the 1% will care about them.
Right, which isn't what we say anyway.
So I thought, I apologize there. I thought he was calling libertarians the party of Trump.
Right. But, you know, the other line, because the 1% will totally care about him. We don't say that. We say that we don't know who's going to care about who, but that the market kind of shields people from that, because people are just they're out for doing what's best for themselves. And so that interaction with people where you have to voluntarily agree to be a part of the transaction, that's how you get the most benefit for both parties. It's when the state picks winners and losers and creates regulations and laws that benefit the people that are, you know, the 1% type people, that are these mm-hmm. scary people that are supposed to rob everyone. But somehow the state's going to protect those people, even though those 1% people are the ones that are influencing the state the most.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that there's no libertarians who say, like, you can, each man is an island or whatever. I don't know of them, though. And I've read a lot. I've read a lot of philosophy and economics and libertarianism. I haven't heard anyone argue that every individual can make it on their own and don't need the help of society. In fact, that's kind of what the market is. It's voluntary trade. It's the division of labor. It's people helping people all the time. So I've heard that one thrown around a lot. Especially from other Catholics who want to say libertarianism is bad or something because it makes you selfish and only focus on the individual. But that's not the case. And I don't know where they get that idea from, that you don't need the help of society.
Yeah, it's because it's easy. It's cheap.
Maybe they just don't understand it or haven't tried to understand it. I don't know. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt.
So let's move on.
Let's continue. Okay, this is back to Mark Shea. Libertarianism is frequently alloyed with the other vital message of Fox. Quote, keep your eye on the brown guy, not us, because he wants to rape your women, take your job, and blow you up, end quote.
Yeah, let's stop it there.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, anyone who reads this website or has listened to this podcast would know that's kind of far from the truth.
It's rather insulting to say that libertarians are the ones that are being, I guess, racist is what he's accusing us of being against Muslims. Libertarians are the ones that are screaming about blowback from the terrible U.S. foreign policy. So
you did a little looking into some of the other stuff Mark Shea has written, and I'm not going to talk for you, but you said he's probably a Democrat.
Yeah, the progressive liberal, whatever.
Progressive liberal,
him.
Yeah, okay. So how many of these progressive liberals were anti-war, anti-drone strikes against brown guys? How many were anti-war during the previous 8 years? Not many.
Yep.
And I'd like to see what he said about those wars under Obama, if we can find that, or if we could talk to him. I'd love to talk to him about that. And we'll see who's really scared of the brown guy and who wants to, who sees every individual, whether they're brown, white, purple, pink, blue, yellow, as an individual and a human being made in God's image and likeness, and who sees them as a group of people who they can use to their to justify their ends. Anyway, anything to add on that?
No, just that, yeah, let's get away from it because I'm going to say something.
Yeah, we could go off the rails. Because that's really funny, because I think one of the, probably the absolute most important part of all, bigger than taxation is theft, is don't kill people.
Right.
So, right.
If I had to pick one thing that I would say that, you know, this is the only thing I'm ever allowed to talk about anymore, it would be war.
Yes. Totally agree. And we're not alone in that. There's a lot of libertarians like that.
Right.
And, you know, we can look at where all the wars are that the United States is waging right now and see who cares about the brown guy. All right, back to Mark Shea. Above all, libertarianism is the belief that plucky individuals can destroy Hitler's Europe, create the internet, build and maintain the interstate, wipe out polio, and defeat Ebola, and that healthcare can be adequately provided by busking on GoFundMe, period.
Yeah, no one says that. Well, first of all, Hitler was destroying himself.
Let's go into it a little more.
Hitler was destroying himself. Fascism was like the fact that people think that we need that, you know, you needed this great massive war effort by the United States to go and defeat Hitler's Germany. It gives some sort of validation to Hitler's fascism, because they're saying, oh, we needed to really go in there, and it was the muscle and strength of the United States and the Allies needed to be what went in there to stop Hitler. No, the fascism was such a terrible economic system that it was eating itself alive. And it was falling, the economy in Germany was absolutely falling apart. Not to say that, you know, fighting a war against them didn't help push it along there, but and on the flip side of that, because everyone loves to throw the World War II Trump card about war. So like, oh, you're against war. What about World War II? Okay, well, it's great that Hitler got defeated, but the United States allied and propped up and through their war effort with an alliance with them, subsidized both the Soviet Union and Communist China on their murder sprees against people that Hitler could only dream of accomplishing.
Yeah, just look at the numbers from the 20th century. It's not even close. And the sad thing is today, you can say you're a communist and people might roll their eyes, some people, but you know, you can teach at a university and be a communist. But if you were a fascist, if you say Stalin did some good, but he was just wrong, that's okay. But if you say Hitler did some good, but was just wrong, rightfully, you shouldn't, you know, rightfully they shouldn't think fascism is good. It's not. But why do, I can only assume the reason we allow communism to be talked about or act like it's some kind of great system that just went wrong and killed 100 million people. Is because we allied with them in World War II. Had we allied with the Germans instead, then I'll bet you we'd be a little more nice to fascism and hate communism a little more here. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's just the thought I had, because both systems were horrible and both killed millions of people. But one is obviously the bad guy forever.
Well, Winston Churchill said that the reason that Mussolini was an enemy of Britain was because he attacked them. And he had a lot of great things to say about Mussolini before World War II.
And I mean, Hitler won Time Person of the Year in like 1939 or something.
Right.
I don't know why. I never read about that. But anyway, okay. Moving on a little bit, you know, just want to run over this real quick. But create the internet, build, maintain the interstate, wipe out polio, and defeat Ebola. He says individuals will do that. I don't know why or what. Libertarian is saying that a single individual person would do really anything. It's all about voluntary interaction and building, you know, creating the internet could be done at Xerox. Right. A company could create that. It's not that.
I mean, but look at all the things that the market created.
Yeah, well, of course.
Like so many things. All right. We have build and maintain the interstate, which, you know, there's no reason that private interest couldn't do that. Although actually the interstate was not really the best idea, probably the way it was built at least. But if there were no cars, what would drive on it? The government didn't invent and build cars. The government didn't invent the laptops that we're using right now. It didn't invent the phones, the cell phones that we're using. I mean, it was all
done by people, right? You know, I don't know why. I don't. When he really is focusing on individuals, and I think it goes back up to earlier in the article where he talks about you don't need the help of anyone else. It's all individuals, and they take that literally as each man working by themselves with no interaction with other people. Yeah, that would probably be really hard to create the internet if you just lived in your basement forever and never talked to people and never did anything. But that's not reality.
When you're just, you know, hoping that it's adequately provided by a busking on GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Has he never heard of like loans from a bank, like getting business loans, or someone going out and getting funding from investors and everything? And there's investment banks that invest billions and billions of dollars on businesses. I mean, it's funny because I think he's, I don't think he's ignorant of that stuff, but for the sake of him going after libertarianism and the markets, he just decides to put that all on hold and just kind of ignore all that for the time being while I tear apart libertarianism. It's absurd, though. You can't compartmentalize that kind of stuff. Either investment banks and that kind of investment exists or it doesn't.
Right. Should we continue with Mark?
Yes.
It is delusion that if you need to defeat big tobacco for giving you cancer, why, you and a couple of law books you perused can easily take on 9,000 lawyers and win.
Okay, first of all, big tobacco does not give anyone cancer. The people who decide to smoke cigarettes give themselves cancer.
Right.
I mean, that you can make the argument about whether or not tobacco companies know or how they advertise and everything. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's ever been a tobacco company that's forced someone to smoke a cigarette.
Not that I know of.
And if also, someone can find an example, by all means, share it.
Also, without the state propping up these companies, because, you know, big tobacco might not even exist. There'd probably be a lot more competition and... Yeah, could they have some kind of trade organization that gets together and does things? Probably, maybe some legal defense fund or something. But I think we would see a lot less of these giant companies in a libertarian society than we do in the society we currently live in the United States, because government and the regulations keep competition out. And that's why big business is always in the back pocket of government. They are buddies. They are not against each other, like a lot of people believe, that government is there regulating and making sure companies do the right thing. They work together, and they keep out competition, and you see that all the time.
And to his point where he says the comment about 9,000 lawyers against you, because that's what they say all the time, but if there's a case where a business did some sort of harm to you and it were obvious, why does it matter if they have one lawyer or 900 million lawyers?
Right. You could also
if they harmed you, it's a slam dunk that you would win. The problem is, however, is that with all the bad, crazy laws on the book created by whom? The state, that you can, your team of 9,000 lawyers does give you an advantage because the law books are so thick and ridiculous and the regulations are the same that you need that huge team to sort through everything and find all these loopholes that are created, not by the market, but by the state. I mean, before the government started getting involved with creating law and you just had a set of common law, it was so much easier to sort through. It was simple.
Right. If you're living in a society and you're supposed to obey the laws, you shouldn't need a guy who went to law school and practiced law for 15 years to understand them. I mean, we all kind of go through our lives without knowing the rule book, and who knows how many laws you break per day? You have no idea, but we're usually not harming other people. Anyway, continuing with Mark Shea, the libertarian answer to a widow Trump wants to toss into the street so he can grab her land and build a casino is, quote, "You're on your own," end quote, and that the true tragedy is when a state superior court judge interferes to inflict violence on Trump to prevent him from doing as he pleases. But yeah, libertarianism totally opposes plunder. All right, we're going to stop right there.
Yeah, let's just do this quickly because we're going to, we don't want this to be 4 hours, but yeah. What name a Mark Shea, I would appreciate if you name a libertarian that is in favor of eminent domain.
There are none. None anywhere, period. Not even the ones who are statist libertarians. No one is in favor of eminent domain. They see that as plunder, as force, as aggression against innocent people. So that's not even libertarianism. So yeah, he comes up later. Well, we'll continue. Let me continue with this because this is where it gets juicy. So here's more Mark Shea. Libertarianism is Mary Rothbard's belief that a child is a parasitic invader with no right to life because it cannot pay its parents for the property and labor it demands in order to be carried to term and raised to adulthood. If they choose to do so, they may. But if they decide to abort it or drive the child to a remote location and abandon it, they may do that too. They owe it nothing. Period.
So
here's where I'll give him some credit. He found the name of Mary Rothbard.
Yes. But you know what's hilarious about that? Do you see that there's a little hyperlink over his name?
I'm going to click it right now.
The article that he links to is a libertarian saying they disagree with Mary Rothbard's position.
That's clever. I just clicked on the link. Where Mary Rothbard went wrong. Children's rights and abortion. That's funny.
It's like, you know what I feel like? I feel like this is Contra Krugman.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob Murphy clicks the links and he's like, this is saying, his proof with this link is saying the exact opposite of what he's arguing or what he's saying it's supporting. So I wrote a rebuttal to another one of Mark Shea's articles the other day, which is linked in the show notes page, about healthcare. And I go into some of the child parent relationships. And to put it in a nutshell, and I'm sure Slappy might have something to say to this too, but there's obligations too. And when parents conceive and give birth to a child, there are certain obligations that they have to the child because the child had absolutely no say in being conceived and born. So it's like taking someone on a hot air. It's like if I said, hey, Mark Shea, do you want to go on my hot air balloon ride? Go up in my hot air balloon for a ride. He says, yeah, sure. And then in the middle of the ride, I say, oh, hey, actually, I don't want you here anymore. Since it's my property, I get to throw you out. That would be absurd.
Except in that sense, and I agree with you, but in that sense, he agreed to go on. So he agreed to go on your property. Not that that means it's okay to throw him out. I'm not arguing that at all. In this case, the child doesn't even agree to be there. The child was put there by the parents. So it would be like you, basically, he's sleeping. You pick him up, take him on a plane. Then he wakes up and you throw him out the door because you say, this is my plane. You're not allowed here. And he's going, what are you talking about? I was sleeping in my bed. I ended up on your plane. Now you're throwing me out. Like, that's...
I don't even think Murray Rothbard wasn't saying like, oh, and this is good that parents do this. He was just taking his philosophy to its logical conclusion. And I've also written about this there. If a parent and in the extremely rare case that a parent does just say, you know what, I don't want to feed my kid anymore, that there are ways to prevent the kid from dying.
Right. But still, the bottom. We'll continue on because we could go on for an entire several episodes on the topic of abortion and how libertarians view it. But really, he's going to go into property rights a little more, and that all stems from self-ownership. As Catholics, we could say God owns us, homesteaded us, gave us the rights. But that child has those same rights. And that's not in violation of libertarianism, which is do not commit aggressive violence against innocent people.
Yeah. And anyway, on top of all of that, I don't know a single libertarian who says it's a good thing to let kids die.
I've never heard that argument.
I've never heard a single person say that.
Except no, for period.
Except for, you know, some abortionists.
Right. But no. Yeah. Right. Anyway, I'm going to continue with Mark Shea. Some libertarians will give you the no true libertarian song and dance to deny that Rothbard's insane doctrine speaks for libertarian doctrine. And yes, it is true that there are libertarians who cannot face up to the logic of their own doctrine and who, being better human beings than Rothbard, are therefore worse libertarians than he was. But the reality is that any logically consistent libertarian must come to the same conclusion he did. The proof of this is that the moment they move away from his monstrous conclusions about refusing children a right to life, they immediately take up exactly the same insane arguments to deny the sick a right to health care, which is but the corollary of the right to life. They immediately resume the lie that there can be no right to anything that requires labor on property of another person, which is exactly the basis of Rothbard's insane doctrine that children have no right to life, period.
Yeah. Again, this is another thing where we say that because you don't have a right to health care, which is someone else's labor, I mean, he kind of just dismisses that argument, that he doesn't consider that maybe, yeah, it is the labor or property of someone else. So how do I justify that, not make him a slave? But again, that doesn't mean that we don't think that people would be dying because they don't get health care. The argument is that if you had a free market system manage the distribution of health care, it would be way better trying to do it, because actually people did get health care before the state tried to intervene in the marketplace, and it did work out very well.
Yeah, the reason we get our health insurance through work wasn't because people were so mad that they weren't getting it. It was because there was wage restrictions during FDR's term, and he allowed you to get your health insurance premiums paid by your employer, which is tax deductible. And that's why we started going that route. It wasn't because people were dying in the streets because they couldn't find any health care. But I also like that Mark Shea, the first sentence of the paragraph, that quote, some libertarians will give you the no true libertarian song and dance, end quote. He's setting it up because he knows this is obviously going to get a reaction from libertarians. And this kind of says that no matter what they say, they're denying Rothbard's insane doctrine that speaks for libertarian doctrine. Where we started the show with the libertarian doctrine is no aggression against innocent people. And then any discussion after that is discussion. You know, you can talk philosophy and you can find all kinds of libertarians who believe. You can find atheist libertarians, Protestants, Jewish, Catholic, all kinds. There is no doctrine that says these points you must follow to be libertarian other than the non-aggression principle. So just because Rothbard said it doesn't mean all libertarians must believe it and must agree with it. There's just step into our world. There's constant infighting in the libertarian world. I will continue on. Libertarians make much of the non-aggression principle. In the final analysis, all it really means is the steadfast belief that the strong may do as they please to the weak, and that the state must never interfere to break up the gang rape, because that would be violence. He actually says the non-aggression principle, then talks about aggression and says that only the state can't do it. The non-aggression principle is the idea that all humans are morally equal. Therefore the state has no, rights that any individual doesn't have. So if you see a gang rape, it is everyone's responsibility to break it up. It doesn't mean the state is not allowed to break it up and it should continue. And it does not mean that the strong can do what they want to the weak. That is aggression.
I would like to see his thought process to get from a statement of the word non-aggression principle to his final analysis, because it leads out a whole lot. Because again, no libertarian believes what he, and I know he's going to say, well, you could say which one, but that's what you're actually thinking. Okay. Well, if there's any non-libertarians listening to this podcast right now, I want to dispel any rumors that there is a secret libertarian club that we all go to where we say, yeah, you know how we're all non-aggression and everything? Yeah, actually, we want to just like kill everyone and be really mean and nasty to everyone. Those meetings don't exist. We don't get behind closed doors with each other and start saying different things than we say publicly. In case that was the
implication,
the belief.
Yeah. I mean, that's just an absurd paragraph. So they say they're against aggression, but then when aggression happens, let's talk about that for just one second. The non-aggression principle means you can't initiate violence against someone. Certainly you can defend yourself, and certainly you can defend someone else. If someone is being gang raped, it is not a violation of the non-aggression principle to forcibly break it up and help that person. So that seems to be what he's saying there, that the non-aggression principle says you have to allow gang rape, which is gang rape is an obvious aggression. So that really doesn't make a, I don't know why he even wrote that paragraph.
Well, I think it might've been a metaphor.
Yeah.
It's still wrong. It's still wrong for the same exact reasons, but I don't know. Maybe he knows that libertarians like to use the rape example and try to throw it back on us.
But he wrote it, so I'm going to reply to it. All right. Continuing. Libertarianism therefore defines taxation as theft, but not price gouging. It defines labor law as violence. Let's continue. We'll read the paragraph. We'll come back. Okay. Libertarianism therefore defines taxation as theft, but not price gouging. This is an aside that I'm saying right now. We will definitely touch on that line. Continuing. It defines labor law as violence, but not strike breaking. It defends the rich when he sells the righteous for silver and the need for a pair of sandals, since that is just the invisible hand of the market working its wonders to weed out the unfit. It stands firmly on the side of cruelty to the alien, the orphan, and the widow, and defies the very possibility, much less the scriptural duty, of the king judging justly or protecting the least of these from rapine and theft of the wealthy, sleek, fat, and powerful. Okay. So do we really need to say the difference between someone asking a price and someone taking your money at gunpoint?
I hope not. I mean, and the same thing for the next one. Labor law is violence, but not strike. They're different things. Like, also, who says libertarians are in favor of strike breaking? It all depends on the situation.
Right.
And what does he even mean by strike breaking? Are the people striking like preventing the business from operating unjustly? Are they like blocking the doors? They're not allowed to do that. And are they just, you know, it's but again, that first line defines taxation as theft, but not price gouging.
Well, we can argue. It is fine as a Catholic, as a Christian. You can argue, if you want, that you should not raise prices during a crisis. You could argue it's the Christian thing to do. But if I say to you, do you want to buy this bottle of water for $100? And you say yes, how is that violence?
I don't know.
And I'm willing to bet there's several of these companies who were handing out free water in Houston last week.
Well, did you see Budweiser stop production of beer and started just producing cans of water to send out?
Right. Right. I did see that. And actually, our podcast last week was on price gouging. So listen to that. Right. We don't need to go into that again.
So I guess all that Budweiser did was they just went from producing Budweiser to Bud Light.
Yeah, exactly. One more thing on this paragraph I want to get to, and then we'll move on. It's just the invisible hand of the market working its wonders to weed out the unfit. That is not what the market does. And if you look anywhere, now we don't have a free market in the world. I understand that. But wherever markets are freer, where there's more voluntary interaction, the poor live better than the poor in these places he seemingly would favor. communist regimes or democratic socialism or whatever you want to call it. Whenever there's free markets, the poor do very well relative to poor in other countries.
And just one other quick note where he says it stands firmly on the side of cruelty to the alien. All right. I know that there's, you know, the big borders debate among libertarians, but you have to at least acknowledge that there is a huge portion of libertarians who are against, border controls and everything. So,
right. I don't know about what's he talking about, the orphan? I guess he's talking about the welfare state.
I guess.
Which, but then we can talk about what's real charity. What would Jesus have wanted you to do? Give your time and money to the poor, or have some guy steal money, you know, and take a lot of it and pay other people and pay other people and pay other people, and then like 6 cents of that dollar gets down to the poor. It's not even true charity to have your money taken.
Exactly. All right. I don't even know if we're halfway through this. So,
Really?
Let's continue.
All right. We'll continue and we'll be quick. Okay. It is, in short, a heresy that limits the effects of the fall to the state and denies they affect the rich and powerful. It is a heresy that absolutizes property rights over the dignity of the human person, especially the poor human person. It is a heresy that says that man was made for the law, especially property law, and not the law for man.
The last line is just that man was made for the law and not law for the man is absurd. Property rights over the dignity of the human person? No, property exactly. rights exist because of the dignity of the human person. And that's what helps securing good property rights is what helps lift poor people out of poverty, because that is one of the reasons why in a lot of third world countries, people stay poor, is because they don't have adequate property rights. And so it's difficult for them to build up anything, because they know it could just be taken away by the local warlords, and which is the state.
Right. And, you know, talking about the dignity of the human person, who's the one waging the wars? Is it the libertarians or is it the state? They're surely not showing a lot of dignity for human people by dropping bombs and killing civilians, which if you read the news, you see that happens plenty. And we'll see, you know, see who really cares about the dignity of the human person. But let's continue with Marche. More than that, it is a mania that sees in every state action, no matter how obvious, just and sane, the imminent approach of tyranny. All taxation is theft. All claims of the common good are collectivism. All work for the common good is a deprivation of freedom. It is the kind of mania in which a person can, with a straight face, write the words, it is a liberal fantasy that government provides anything. For something to be given by government, they have to first take it from someone else, end quote. On the state invented and state provided internet. Oh, I see. Okay. So the state, and he's saying the state invented and the state provides the internet.
Does it provide the internet?
No. But
and there's also a lot of discussion about just say that, oh yeah, the state invented the internet is very misleading. There's a lot more that went into the invention of the internet than just a state laboratory said, like, oh, here's the internet and here it is for everyone. And also, the internet would not be what it is today if businesses didn't see a huge amount of value in it. The state was just using it for like transferring files to like certain laboratories to each other or something. I know I'm like way oversimplifying what happened, but it was the reason that you and I have the internet today the way we have it is because people in the marketplace saw a whole lot of value in it.
Right. And also, he's assuming we wouldn't have the internet if the state didn't fund a lot of it going into it. I mean, maybe it wasn't time for the internet when it was invented.
Right. The fallacy of denying the antecedent.
Right. And that money could have been put to more productive uses and the internet would have came when it was supposed to come. Yep. Anyway.
Also, just that he does the common good thing again, where if you just substitute the common good for central planning is what he should be saying, then yeah, then he'd be absolutely right. But again, we're not against the common good. We're against a central planner deciding right. what the common good is and trying to create that.
Exactly. And whenever people use things, euphemisms like common good, you know that means someone's getting screwed. But anyway, so talk about the dignity of the individual human and then talk about the common good. Anyway, let's continue. Meanwhile, the common sense, there's another one, common sense teaching. So you can't disagree if it's common sense, but I'll start over. Meanwhile, the common sense teaching of the church is that there is a common good, that we begin, as Rothbard insanely denies, not as adults freely exchanging goods and labor, but as human beings in radical and incalculable and unpayable debt, not only to God, but to our parents, our culture, our country, our civilization, and ultimately to the whole human race that has provided us free of charge with life, a language, Shakespeare, the Beatles, the Declaration of Independence, the Bible, lullabies, clothes, electricity, Spider-Man, E minus MC2. No, that does say equals, doesn't it? E equals MC squared. Yeah. my screen's a little blurry, so I was going to read it exactly. Anyway, and a billion other things that we never would have thought of ourselves.
Is he kind of like pulling a bait and switch with the word debt?
I guess.
Because, all right, I mean, how do I pay back what my culture has given me, for example? And I know, you know, I'm pretty sure my parents don't have a tab for me that at some point, I guess I'm going to reach the age where I'm going to be like, all right, here's a tabulation of all the money that you owe us. I mean, I appreciate my parents and I'm, you know, and I think we have a pretty good relationship. So I don't like, I don't know if Mark Shea has kids, but is he hanging debt over them right. for everything he does for them? It doesn't.
That's the other thing. I'm very thankful for, you know, the life I've had. I appreciate all that. But just because people act civilly toward each other doesn't mean you owe them something.
Right. And because Thomas Edison invented the light bulb does not mean that I have to go to Thomas Edison's grave and pay him money every time I use the light bulb. He was,
in fact, the nice thing about the market is that you do pay money to use the light bulb.
Right. And he was already paid. I mean, they always say like, oh, you have a debt to your teachers. What debt?
Well, I
already paid them.
I paid them for their service. Exactly. And that's
doesn't
the
mean
same
I'm not appreciative for the, it's like I can go to the, go to a restaurant and eat a great meal and it tastes fantastic and it fills me up and I'm able to be productive the next day because of that energy I have. Does anyone say, oh, you are in debt to that restaurant? No, you paid them for the meal and you know, you enjoyed it and it was great. So it added other benefits to your life other than the basic biological need that it stated.
Right. Say there was a community that was built, all these houses were built, and someone paid you and me to build the roads, and we built the roads, and we were paid to build the roads, and then people use them for the next 70 years. Those people don't owe us anything. We were paid to build the road. We were paid for the service we provided. Someone who uses it 50 years later doesn't owe me anything.
Exactly.
So I'll continue with Mark Shea. We have two paragraphs left, and we'll wrap this up. Yes, the central and core lie of libertarianism is its radical ingratitude and its belief in the grotesque fiction of the self-made man. You are not your own. You are bought with a price. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 19 to 20. That is why the central and core truth of Christian revelation is radical gratitude, also known as the Eucharist. Well, again, the central core, well, he says the core, the central and core lie of libertarianism is its radical ingratitude. There is nothing about libertarianism that says you shouldn't be grateful. Right. And the self-made man, we already talked about this. The only thing that is libertarianism is don't inflict violence against innocent people. That's it. Anything after that is up to the individual.
Right. And again, he's conflating two different ideas that I can sit here as a libertarian and talk about individualism and everything, and then also be a Catholic and talk about, you know, that we need God
right.
to live. And I don't think there's any contradiction there because we're talking about two different things. And if you want to talk and if you want to combine the two, then we can certainly do that. But that's not what he's doing. I mean, it's really unfair because, you know, there are plenty of Catholic libertarians, but a lot of libertarians aren't Catholic, or they're not Christian, or they don't have religion, or they're atheists. So they're not, like, when they're talking about the self-made man, how can you then criticize them for not bringing God into it when they're like, that was never, and not to say that, you know, as Catholics, we shouldn't believe that God has a hand in all of this, but he's talking about two different things.
Yeah, and we often talk, we've probably had a podcast about it. I know we've written articles about it, but if you read what Jesus actually did, he seems to be very libertarian in not inflicting violence against innocent people. And what comes to mind is the adulterer, you know, the law says to stone her, and he says who is without sin shall cast the first stone, tells the woman to go forth and sin no more. So is he being tolerant of the adulterer by not stoning her? I don't think so.
Right.
Anyway, let's do this last paragraph, wrap it up, and here we go. Libertarianism, I repeat, borrows from the Catholic tradition, as all really powerful heresies do. Indeed, what gives all heresy power is the truth it misappropriates. But libertarianism adds nothing to the faith. The truth it asserts are all truths the faith asserts, but the lies it asserts are its own and only damage our relationship with God, our neighbor, and our own souls. Choose the whole faith over shreds and patches of libertarianism. Period. End of article.
So libertarianism is not designed to add anything to the Catholic faith, really. As you've stressed over and over again, libertarianism says don't hurt other people and take their stuff. It's the non-aggression principle. So, I mean, it complements the faith, as I said previously, but to say that it's – to criticize it because it doesn't add – he can't see that it adds anything to the faith doesn't – that doesn't – it's not really a good argument against it because no one's claiming that it – no one's saying that, like, oh, here's this libertarianism thing. It will make your Catholicism complete. You shouldn't need – since I'm, you know, a libertarian Catholic, I don't believe that I need libertarianism to come to the fullness of my Catholicism. I think that you will get to the same place with both Catholicism and libertarianism independently, which I think strengthens both positions.
I agree completely.
And philosophies. So, and yeah, and again, where he just says, you know, he talks about all the lies of libertarianism. I don't want to accuse Mark Shea of being a liar because, you know, I don't know him, but at best, he's just misunderstands libertarianism, and I'll leave it at that.
Right. I do want to bring up one more point. I was reading through some of the comments earlier. And there's people thanking him, and this is great and wonderful. And people talk about how libertarians tolerate vices. And I talked about this in a previous paragraph about Jesus not stoning the adulterer. But just because you don't think violence should be inflicted against someone who is participating in these vices that, you know, hurt the soul and hurt your faith and your relationship with God, doesn't mean you tolerate them or accept them or encourage them or are in favor of them or participate in them. You can be, you know, just because we don't think you should throw someone in jail for having a plant being, you know, if you don't know what I'm talking about, we're talking about marijuana. You don't have to smoke it to go to jail. You just have to have it. That just because we don't think you should be thrown in jail, lose your job, you know, you have a family at home, whatever, doesn't mean we think it's great to be high all the time or live your life high. Or, you know, maybe some people will argue that, but that has nothing to do with libertarianism. The idea is you can't inflict violence against that person who is using drugs. You should help that person. You should help that person with their problems and their addictions, and a better solution to a drug problem would be help and caring about that individual and their human dignity instead of locking them in a cage and calling them trash, which, let's be honest, a lot of Catholics, Christians do and encourage and support the war on drugs because they believe drugs are bad, illegal drugs are bad and shouldn't be had. So they think it's perfectly fine to throw them in jail. I think that's wrong. And this wasn't an issue in ancient Rome that Jesus would have ever talked about. But based on the story with the adulterer, I think he would come to the same conclusion that we do.
Right. And you're lucky that I'm a libertarian, because since you don't share my affinity for tractors, I would be locking you in a cage otherwise.
You remembered. Thought I was getting away with it this week.
Please. This week. I keep a notebook next to me. Actually, I don't have it tonight because I'm not
a cheater.
But all I do is just like in big letters, the notes I write for each episode is just like tractor and ways I can fit tractor into the episode. So, you know what?
You did.
So, with that,
what's your free market story?
That I could buy a notebook that I could write tractor in all the time. That was actually the thing I was worrying about. I forgot to ask you if you had any free market stories.
Yeah. No, but let's talk about the notebook, because that is, I mean, think about it.
The movie?
It's kind of like, exactly. What did you think I was talking about? Something to write on? Of course I'm talking about the movie. No, but just think of really the miracle of having a notebook. No one could do that on their own. It would be insanely expensive. No one has the knowledge, the technical skills or whatever. But all the things that go into a notebook come to your store and it's very inexpensive. Pretty much anyone can buy a notebook.
Right. Who looks at a tree and says, or some ore, metal ore, and says, hey, I'd like to process that down into the 100-page thing that you can write stuff in.
Right. And the paper, all the stages in the production of this notebook are not working together. They're not doing it necessarily with the end goal of creating a notebook. They're just people who cut trees and replant them because they want to stay in business. And whatever they do to make paper, they do it. And it ends up, the person who wants to make the notebook is buying that from them. The people cutting the trees probably have no idea where that's going. Same with the metal and the cardboard and involved in the cover and the transportation, the trucker, the whole process is, it would take forever even just to go through it, but it all happens. It ends up at your local pharmacy or stationery store, and it's very inexpensive. And if you were to do that on your own, you'd probably go broke.
Probably. I wouldn't want to do it. I have much better investment ideas in my head, like a tractor store.
But you probably would go broke doing that. Because people, where I live. Yeah, but I hear people are still buying tractors from 1971.
No, I don't mean like a brand new tractor thing. I mean like parts and
1971 tractors. I got you. Right on. Yeah.
I would sell new tractors. I mean, there's a market for that. All the people that think that John Deere is the only name in town. No. They make a lot of money off those fools.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you. All right, so the show notes page for this episode is mcflugel.com/55, and we will link to the article that we talked about, as well as having a link to another article that rebutted this article too from A Simple Fool. And then I've also linked to my rebuttal to another piece by Mark Shea about a little bit about healthcare and about the child-parent relationship, and where he goes. I don't go through the whole article, but just a couple of certain points that he makes to kind of base everything else off of. I go after that. Also,
hey, Mark Shea, if you do come across this, someone forwards it to you, and you want to come on the show and talk, we'd be happy to have you.
Absolutely. So let us know.
Yeah.
Plenty of ways to contact. That's the other thing on the show notes page. Plenty of ways to contact us via various social media outlets. So we got Facebook, Twitter, Gab, that thing, Patreon, Hatreon, Steemit, Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. We have YouTube. And also, very importantly, sign up to our email list. We'll send you updates, what's going on, and other special things that we've got going on. So, anything else for us, Slappy?
I think that covers it.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Peace.